Hello. Thanks for coming after lunch. I know how that is sometimes. Blood sugar's kicking in or getting low. It gets kind of tired. So I appreciate y'all showing up. And even though we don't have a stand-up, standing room only crowd here today, I want to say that I'm so glad you're here because y'all are the people that are going to lead the revolution, the data-driven revolution. I truly believe that if you listen to what I'm saying today, that you're going to think differently and better than everybody else in computer security. This truly is a red pill moment. And so my only minor overall goal is to help you completely think about computer security differently from this moment forward. And I'm not saying that lightly. I've been doing this for a long time. Had a lot of people, Sands, Bruce Schneier, other people say, hey, you should read this guy's white paper. I have a white paper about this. And it's something that's driving a big part of Microsoft as well. So thanks to Win with a data-driven defense. Again, I'm Roger Grimes. I'm a principal security architect with Microsoft. I've been with Microsoft going on 10 years. I've been doing computer security for almost 30 years. I've written 8 books, 1,000 magazine articles. I'm the InfoWorld magazine security columnist. And so my joke is, if you hate that guy, I'm that guy, and you can finally yell at him. And I believe that this topic, out of anything I've ever talked about, written about, this is the most important topic in computer security I've ever done. And I plan to dedicate the next 17 years of my life to this particular topic. There's some of the books. I kind of laugh at some of them, like the Windows Vista security one. I wanted like a knight holding a sword, telling you how to fight the bad guy. Instead, they kind of put a wimp that looks like me on there, hiding. Like, that's not really the best promotion of the book. So if you write a book, you don't really get to pick your cover a lot of times. But with that said, that's cool. So besides all of that, my experiences, I've been doing computer security consulting, although I was also a VP of IT. I was a PC technician and network technician and all that sort of stuff for a few years until I got into computer security consulting. And I've since then consulted with somewhere between, 10 to 30 customers a year, large and small, on computer security, and almost none of them do the right things. I mean, really, in almost 30 years, I've come across one or two people that did it the right way. Most of the companies I go to are doing horrible. And what's amazing to me is I'll tell them, usually I'm there doing an audit or something, but I go, hey, I know you've, or I do a lot of PKI. Some of y'all I see were at my SHA-2 migration talk this morning, but I usually go in there, no matter what I'm doing, I'm like, hey, this is how you're mostly getting exploited. This is your biggest weakness, these two or three things. And then I'm always amazed that if I come back a year and they're like, yes, we agree. Yes, yes, let's go patch this. Let's go patch Java or whatever it is. I come back a year later, they haven't changed anything. So not only are they not doing the right things, but when I tell them exactly what they need to do to decrease risk the fastest, the most that they can, even if it doesn't cost them anything other than doing it, a year goes by, nothing's done, and they get exploited again. I've been to companies that have been exploited in the paper. Half the companies I go to are usually in the paper for being exploited. I've been to companies that lost hundreds of millions of dollars, and even those companies are not doing the basic free things that they could be doing that would make them significantly more secure. And so I find them to be just as exploitable. If they haven't been exploited, they could easily be exploited. And it really bothered me for like a decade. I'd get up and I was like, wow, like I install PKI for a living, I do smart cards and virtual smart cards and all this great stuff, but if you're not patching right, all the stuff that I'm doing isn't doing anything. So I literally used to wake up kind of depressed. I'm like, I'm going out, I'm making lots of money, I live in a beautiful house in Key Largo, Florida that's on the water, I have a boat that goes scuba diving and fishing every day that I'm home, I have a beautiful wife, nice kids, all that stuff. But I used to wake up and go, everything that I'm doing today is not going to make them any more secure because they're not hiring me to do the right things. And it really bothered me. So the way that I say to tell people to think about this is that imagine that there's two armies, an evil army and a good army, that have been fighting for years and years and years. And the evil army is winning by outflanking the good army on the right flank. And normally in a regular war or army, if you're being outflanked on the right flank, if you're a good army that wants to survive, you're going to put more troops and weapons and resources on the right flank. But what happens in the IT world, and almost every single case, is they just don't put any more troops on the right flank. Maybe they even put troops on the left flank. Maybe they've heard about some dastardly attack that's going to take over the world, and they start stacking up troops in the middle. But for reasons that were previously unknown to me before I thought about it and researched it, they didn't put more troops on the right flank. And I'm saying this all the time. Like, I'll go to many places, I'll do a security audit, and I'll say, your number one problem, and this is very common in most organizations, is that you have three software programs that you need to patch. Usually it's Java, Adobe Acrobat, maybe some other type of player or something like that. Usually they have the Windows stuff fairly good, although not perfect. But how they're being attacked is usually through their internet browser software that's unpatched and social engineering. And yet when I go to these companies, they're spending millions to tens of millions of dollars on everything but that. Or if they have a patch management team, the patch management team or person is usually given money incentivized to patch Windows. And Windows, if you look at any independent survey out there, a Windows exploit is not among the top 10 reasons why most people get exploited. It's usually browser-related software, and then after they break into the initial breach, so they're then somehow using Windows-type software. Or social engineering, right? Doesn't require any type of software vulnerability if I can just trick you out of your password. And lots of people here I've been talking to today were telling me, oh, we do test phishing, right? Where we test our users by sending fake phishing emails. And anyone that's ever done that, you're shocked by how many people respond. Like, usually it's like 40 to 60% of your people respond. Even smart people, CEOs, CISOs and stuff respond to these fake phishes. Matter of fact, it's so bad, most of the time if I'm involved in them, we're not allowed to conduct them anymore. Right? It's a punishment. You found that you're very vulnerable through phishing, yet they wouldn't even let them, like, hey, oh, whoa, oh, why did they give you permission? I've seen people almost fired over it because they didn't get the right permission from the right person. And you're certainly not releasing who got caught in the fish. And they're usually not allowed to do it again. And then that same company that just proved that 40 to 60% of the people could be fished out of their credentials are given maybe 30 minutes of social engineering training a year. It is not right aligned against the threats they face. They're not putting more troops where they're needed. So what is a data-driven defense? So it's a methodology that allocates security resources more efficiently and effectively to mitigate the top root causes of the threats and risks they face. That is so simple. I'm literally sitting up here with 30 years of experience going, hey, you should defend against the stuff that's hurting you. It's so simple. I feel like Warren Buffett telling people to buy low and sell high, and yet people don't do it. I mean, it's really quite amazing. But why did it get this, I'll tell you how it got this way, but a data-driven defense is something that focuses on trying to prevent breaches as much as possible, and they say you can't prevent every breach. But I'll go further and tell you that most companies, if I look at the way that they're defending, they're not really trying. So you should try better at preventing the initial breaches. You should focus on the root causes of initial exploits, of how they're getting in. Because ultimately, if you don't solve that second problem right there, you're never going to stop the bad guy. It's whack-a-mole. Otherwise, right? I kind of hate when I see these people, oh, we detect this virus or that virus. Like that's going to solve anything. Like, the bad guy can't make up a different thing that's going to break in. Even phishing, right? If we don't really solve phishing in the right way, all they have to do is make up a different phishing campaign to get people to select and respond. So we have to look at the root causes of initial exploits. Your best data in a data-driven defense is what's attacking you right now. Every company I go to kind of has a different security rhythm, a different risk tolerance, and every company I go to says, our security tolerance is very low. Like, well, get rid of all passwords then. Oh, we can't do that. We have systems that would break. Well, you need to fully patch Java. I see you're being broken in through unpatched Java. You need to patch Java. We can't do that to break everything. So every company that tells me that they have a low security to risk tolerance, really, every company kind of decides, oh, we're going to accept risk here and not accept risk there, that sort of stuff. But the best way to measure your biggest threat is what's currently attacking you or likely to attack you. So that when somebody reads in the media about the latest worm attack, and God knows I am frustrated because now they give them really cute names and they make icons, like they're trying to brand it. The sandworm attack, watch out, heart bleed, oh my God, with blood coming out of the heart. You know, they're just trying to sell software, so they want to gin up scare and fear. But if you want to know what should you be defending against, what's attacking you? Is it social engineering? Is it unpatched software? If it's unpatched software, what unpatched software it is? And let me say that I go into most IT security organizations, and like, yeah, we know what the problem is, because they got projects trying to fix it, doing PKI and smart cards and everything else. I say, okay. So I get them alone, and I go, what do you think is the number one problem the way that people break into your organization. And never in my career have I had two people tell me the same thing in that organization. It is almost, usually it's 20%, 20%, 20%, but 20%. And if the people in IT security can't agree on what the biggest threats and risks are, how are you effectively going to defend? How are you going to be able to communicate that to management and senior management so you get the money? Like I hear people tell me, hey, we can't patch Java. I can't believe they won't let us patch Java. They can't. I can't believe it. Our hands are tied. Did you go to management and tell them that it's responsible for 79% of all successful exploits? Cisco put out that statistic. I think it was 79 or 89%. Cisco wrote in a report about 2 years ago. It's down to 49%. But back 2 years ago, when it was really bad, before the browsers literally started ripping Java out, but if you think you went to management and went, hey, we looked at this, and 8 out of 10 threats come from one program that we are not allowed to patch. And if we don't fix that, everything else we do will not work. If you went to management and said, I've identified the thing that's the number one problem by far, you think senior management would sit there and go, oh, okay, don't patch it. No. They would say, you need to fix it. You go create me a special project and get the right resources, and you tell me how to fix it. So when someone tells me, oh, we can't patch Java, I know that we're not communicating effectively to senior management, because senior management wouldn't sit by and let an 80% problem go unaddressed. And what do we want to give to them is let them know we want to use real data and let them know what our current and most likely attacks are against ourselves today. Relevance drives risk assessment, and that makes sense, right? Risk, if you're trying to calculate risk, if you do the basic model, go to Wikipedia, look at what risk is. One of the big things is relevance, likelihood, chance of occurring, and how much damage it's going to cause. You will be amazed, though, in computer security defense, how much that doesn't matter. We'll talk about why that is. So a data-driven defense, right lines, mitigations against the most critical threats. I have a white paper updated every couple of months. Again, it's been recommended by Sands, Bruce Schneier, and other people that people should read. And certainly Microsoft is doing a lot of these things. And I'm going to share with you some of the things Microsoft is doing. But it's more, it's not a product. It's not a, Roger, show me the steps, 1, 2, 3, 4. It's a mindset to start with of examining your organization and trying to say, are we defending against the right threats? Are we putting the mitigations in the right places and the right amounts? So why did it get this way? Why are most companies inefficient defenders? Well, first of all, they don't understand the threats and the risk as well as they think they do. I was at a large financial institution last year for a smart card PKI project and did SHA 2 in the same time. And I remember we met with the CIO as I was leaving to do a project status report. The project was ahead of time, under budget, implemented well. That happens like what, once or twice a year if you're lucky, if ever. But it was this great project. But I remember the CIO said, I'm so glad that we have smart cards now because we won't have to worry about APT, Advanced Persistent Threat Attacks, anymore. I mean, what are you talking about? This has nothing to do with that. It's not going to stop APT. And she said, what? No, it will. I said, no, really, they can still steal the hashes, and there's hashes behind the scenes, and you don't need a smart card. You can just pass the hashes and blah, 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 blah. And there's things you can do to prevent hashes from being passed, but we didn't do any of that in this project. And I could see at that point that she didn't like me anymore, because she had been told something else by a trusted advisor. They just spent $2 million putting in a big smart card project, and I had just told her that it didn't fix the thing it was supposed to fix. And like for the next 15, 20 minutes, I could see her talking differently to me, being guarded and not thinking I was a trusted advisor. Well, someone came in towards the end of the talk, and they whispered something in her ear, and I was like, so what is that? She goes, oh, we got broken into by APT. You know, and from that point forward, yeah, she now takes me as a trusted advisor. But what had happened is she'd been misled. She'd been told it was going to fix the problem. It didn't anywhere address it. And, of course, the person that said, hey, we need to do this for $2 million, there wasn't a lot of accountability, right? Even when people do the wrong things and it doesn't fix it, when the vendor tells you, you'll never need antivirus again, no one gets held accountable when that is shown not to be true. And most people, almost all of them, don't use their own data to drive solutions. Or let me go further, they don't even have much data. Forget using the data to drive solutions, they don't even have data that could be used to drive the right solutions. They certainly don't put in the right defenses in the right places in the right amounts. and they don't hold people accountable and vendors accountable for doing things. So I was at one vendor, and they're like, hey, we need to buy one of these network security intrusion detection devices that cost $100,000 a box, and we need 20 of them to stop APT. I do a lot of APT stuff when I'm not doing PKI. But I said to the vendor, I said, this can stop APT? And they're like, yes, yes. I said, well, tell me. I said, what do you mean? I said, walk me through the scenario. APT breaks into your workstation, downloads your local administrator hash, uses that local administrator cache to capture this hash, and eventually get to the domain admin hash, a domain controller, and dumps all those hashes, and then they can pretend to be somebody else. Tell me how your product, walk me through the scenario of how your product detects somebody that's pretending to be a legitimate user in my environment. And it was like, you could have heard crickets chirp. They don't know. So if you're going to buy something that claims to do something, tell them, walk me through the scenario so I can see why you think it does what it says it does. And then they certainly spend too much resources not getting the right results. Because if you don't have the right information, you don't have the right data, you're not communicating with the right people about the right things, you're certainly not going to be efficient. And no army would live long if it didn't put troops on the right flanks. But it's weird in the IT world, we kind of do. And we go on for 20 years, and I see it in the media. Wow, those hackers, oh my God, those hackers were just, oh my God, they're so smart. And we know they're not so smart, it's just that they looked for a box that was unpatched, or poor password, or default passwords, right? Like, we know the hackers they claim are so smart. They're not smart, they're just kind of persistent. And they just look for things. Whenever they say, this is what we did wrong, what is this, a phishing attack or unpatched software, right? And that is the way it is. And most, very rarely is it a zero day. Sometimes it is, but most of the time it isn't. Let me say that if your life is you're worried about zero days, you're worried about the wrong things. But part of the problem is that we don't rank risk well as human beings. And Bruce Schneier has a couple of books, Beyond Trust and some other stuff that I just love reading. But one of the best things I love is I live in Key Largo, Florida. And every single person coming to me asks me, and they're going to go diving or snorkeling with their family, every single person, every guest goes, hey, you got sharks in the water? And I'm like, hey, you know, it's salt water, it's an ocean, yes, there's sharks. Do you see sharks? I'm like, yes, yes, we see sharks. But I said, there's never been a unprovoked shark attack in Key Largo history. And by the way, my hobby is filming sharks. Unless I'm holding a bloody fish, the shark does not care about me. If you're holding a bloody fish, it's a different thing, and they call that provocation. But there, I said, when you're coming swimming or snorkeling with me, as long as you're not holding a bloody fish, as long as a fish did not run into you and impale yourself on your fingers, you're now holding an unexpected bloody fish, there's a very small chance of being attacked by a shark. Sometimes when they get on my boat, they're quiet and they're almost in tears. I have literally had people in tears not getting off the boat, not because they couldn't swim, but they were worried about sharks. And I tell them, did you fly here? Yeah. Well, your chances of dying in the airplane are 1 in 11 million. Did you drive here once you got from the airport? They're like, yep. I said, chances of dying in a car accident in a given year is 1 in 5,000. And you're worried about the 1 in 3.7 million attack, and you just survived far more likely odds? It's incredible. But we're like that as human beings. Like, I know most people I know that get on airplanes are afraid to be on the airplane, but they weren't afraid for the car ride to the airport. And the car ride to the airport is far more risky if you look at the evidence. So as human beings, we are far more scared of the little thing, because who wants to be consumed by another animal than we are by a car accident that we have lots of experience with. But as human beings, we just, even when you know the metrics, most of the time we don't even know the metrics, but when we know the metrics, we still don't make the right decisions all the time. Like in Florida, again, Key Largo, there's US 1 that goes up the road, and in Florida, you do not have to have a motorcycle helmet to be in Florida. To drive a motorcycle in Florida. And I have a motorcycle license, although I was also in the rescue squad, so I no longer ride a motorcycle. But you don't have to wear a helmet, and everybody loves to get to the Florida Keys and get across those bridges and take off the helmet. We have like 1 to 2 deaths a week to motorcyclists, and it's almost never their fault. It's almost always somebody that turned into the back of them or a drunk that ran into them. You know, it's great, and I believe in freedom and all that stuff, but I think if you saw the odds, you would either wear a helmet or you certainly wouldn't be worried about the shark. So how did we get here? Well, first of all, our threat intelligence isn't so intelligent. It doesn't focus enough on locally experienced attacks and certainly doesn't capture root causes. And by that I mean, is that every company I go to can typically print up an antivirus report and tell me how many viruses and malware and worms. And when I say virus, that's generic. I know there's not that many viruses anymore. It's mostly worms and hybrids and stuff. But most of them can tell me exactly how many malware things that they had in their company, but they can't tell me how they got in. I was like, did they get in because of unpatched software or social engineering or a zero day or misconfiguration or something like that? Like, if you don't solve the root cause, you're not solving the virus. I'm like, how is all this? You just showed me that you had 37, you know, virus eradications over the last year. How did most of them get into your company? They don't know. And a lot of them, all you got to do is look at the family of the malware to find out these are the ways these things infect you. And this is it's a pretty important idea to know how something infected you. Like with Conficker, anybody remember the Conficker worm? Yeah, if you've been around probably 7, 8 years, you had a problem with that. Well, at Microsoft, Conficker started out as this little tiny thing that nobody worried about, and then it turned into a really big thing, and lots of our customers are infected. Microsoft is infected. Some of our offices were infected. And we're having a hard time getting people to stop being infected. And it could spread by like 1 of 5 ways. It was like unpatched software, if you used really weak password shares, so you used a password 12345, worked by USB key, desktop INI. There are a couple of modalities. And in our papers, our KB articles warning you about Conficker, we said, here's the 5 things you should do to offset Conficker. But it kept infecting. And finally, we started a new project called Backstreet. And we started collecting information. We changed our antivirus software, Windows Defender and other things that went on your system, to collect. So if it detected Conficker, it checked to see if you had the patch. Or it checked to see if you had the desktop any or the USB key. And lo and behold, towards the end of it, we detected that a whole lot of people were getting infected from USB key. As a matter of fact, it seemed like most of it was USB key, not unpatched software like we were thinking. Our gut feeling was that all these people had unpatched software. Most of them had the patch, still got infected, and it showed remnants of the USB key. So in the next patch we pushed out, we disabled auto runs on USB. We warned everybody, told them how you could stop the enforcement, but by default, auto runs no longer works. It's still the case today. Conficker almost disappeared overnight. Because we finally started collecting the root cause data, started paying attention to it, and pushed it out, and we've certainly tried to do the same thing on other big malware outbreaks. Inadequate detection. Most people don't know how to detect an APT. So you've got, one that I love. I went to a company and we found the pass the hash attack tool pwdump on a bunch of domain controllers. And they detected it and removed it and declared it a success. I was like, aren't you a little bit interested in how that got there? Oh, that's not that's some other division's problem or blah, blah, blah. They got rid of it. Or instead of telling me what viruses you detected, you know what a better statistic is? How long was the virus on your system before it got detected and removed? Because if the antivirus program says, I detected it right away, beep, got rid of it, it's like a firewall blocking some port probe. Who cares? But did it live for a day or two or 3 days or 4 days on your system before it got detected and removed? Was the system that it was detected on, was it a domain controller versus a workstation? Does y'all's antivirus reports tell you a risk modality of where someone got infected? What we found at Microsoft, we were worried about all these elevated accounts, enterprise admin, domain admin, local administrator. But we realized almost everybody in our environment is an administrator of some system. Not all, but you could be an SAP administrator. You could be, some people were administrators of 10 different systems, and if they got a virus or worm in their system, even though they weren't enterprise or domain admin, they had access to the keys of the kingdom for that particular division. So if we now find out that somebody has been infected, that's a CEO, CIO, we actually have a list of people considered very important people, or your system is considered important to us because you're an admin on a lot of systems, that's a bigger risk to us than if you were just somebody that worked in the cafeteria that didn't work with any particular special system at all. That's much more important. How long was the malware there before it got detected? I'll tell you how we do it today, shortly. Bear with me. So little or no metrics captured or reported, certainly not the root causes. And then when something is detected, it isn't effectively communicated up the chain to the entire organization. So I go to companies and I convince them, like, look at this. You got broken and embarrassed in the media because you had unpatched Java. And the guy's like, yeah, we've got 400,000 unpatched Javas. If I go to the CIO, I go, what do you think your biggest threat is? You know what they tell me? I think it's cloud security. I think it's employee. We got to make sure our employees, you know, get checked, background checked even better. But that's because the CIO and CISO and stuff have a different set of worries, a larger long-term set of worries. But if you tell them, hey, did you know that Java is responsible for 91% of all your attacks? I'm like, no, I didn't know that. Or they tell me they did and they didn't. But very rarely, when I ask the CIO, when I say, what is the number one way that your company's attacked successfully the most? They've never given me the right answer. It's always some esoteric answer. And when I go back down to the people in the field, they never tell me, I think it's an employee background check. They always tell me what's in the field that they're experiencing. So this is why we have problems. But how do we get here again? Ignoring the root cause. How did they break in? Was it a zero-day unpatched software? If it was unpatched software, what software was it? Was it social engineering? If it was social engineering, was it an email social engineering? Was it a phone call social engineering? Was it they went to a website, clicked on a link, and got social engineered that way? Was it a data leak, insider problem? Was it user error, misconfiguration? I come across websites on the internet that have everyone full control on the website. You can scan for that. I'm like, how did you get that way? You know, if somebody was configuring the web server and they were told to add a user or permission on a folder, and then that famous question comes up, do you want to apply this to all folders and subfolders below this point? Who of us hasn't went, sure. And once they click yes, bzzz. I've even done it. I remember one time I was like, no, no, and it was like 60,000 things revolving. I was like, no, and I just stopped it. And I'm embarrassed to admit today that when I stopped it, I went, wow, that just changed a lot of ACLs. Huh, I shouldn't do that again. And I walked away. I have no idea whether that system got taken over or not. But if you want a data-driven defense, you've got to ask yourself, can you alone answer what's the biggest threat to your company that's currently successfully exploiting you the most? Can your IT security team tell you that? Can your IT team? In the best world, your entire company should know that. There should be a newsletter going, hey, our number one problem is social engineering. And that newsletter from your company should always have anti-social engineering text every single week or month until that's no longer your number one problem. What I see instead is companies like, you know what? We know that social engineering is our number one problem. They put it in the newsletter. They update it. They tell people no longer boot from floppy disk. Can't tell you how many end-user educations are so old. They tell people not to boot from floppy disk. But they're like, hey, we upgraded it, and you shouldn't, this is how you avoid social engineering, blah, blah, blah. And we did it. We put it in the newsletter. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. And we have no more problems with social engineering. No, in a data-driven defense, as long as social engineering is your number one thing, that's the first article in every newsletter every single time until it's no longer a problem. If you don't do that, are you not putting the troops on the right flank? But it's amazing that companies, and most companies, it's unpatched software, social engineering, and yet most of them offer little to no social engineering training. At Microsoft, we did this 30-minute video that every employee starts to take. Every year you gotta take it, mandatory. What we decided to do one year, after we had some bad social engineering, is that we took some really high-risk people in certain departments, and we gave them a half-day training. And even in the 30-minute training, we got real people that everybody knew that are real smart, like Mark Rusinovich smart, although it wasn't Mark Rusinovich, but it was people like that in Microsoft that are well known. And we had them go, hey, I got this email from a coworker. It looked like something that I was would be interested in. I clicked it. I then saw that it wasn't really from the coworker, and I closed it, and I didn't report it, and I was wrong. And we did that by about two or three people. And lo and behold, we had the best success rate at stopping social engineering after that. And our social engineering fish tests are so successful that you have a hard time pushing out a survey sometimes in Microsoft if you didn't do it right. Like if it has a wrong link or something in it and it doesn't say Microsoft.com and all this other stuff, people are like, hey, is this real? Is this real? And our survey people start to go, hey, we can't even get a regular survey done anymore. I call that success. That's where we want to be. And do you have the data to back it up? Because when you go to your management, you go to senior management, and he's like, hey, I think unpatched Java is our biggest problem. And let me say, I don't mean to pick on Java, because Java's now under 50%. It's always going to be something, but sometimes it's Java. But you've got to give data. You don't go, hey, I really think I'm seeing a lot of unpatched Java. You know, you want to give the report that shows how many unpatched Java and how many times it led to damage within the company. I had one company, and unpatched Java was the biggest problem, and they knew it, and so they took unpatched Java off the report that they gave to the CEO. They told me, oh, it's so big, it obscures the graph. We can't do anything about it, so we just removed it. Guess what my first recommendation was? Add that column back. Also, prioritize root cause equal to breach effort. Or maybe even better is, a lot of people focus on intent. We got broken into, I see past the hash here. I see a past the hash dumping tool, and we know it's a bad guy that's trying to do really bad things to our environment. But if you find a worm or a Trojan, or let me say you find adware. You go to a person's computer and all they have is adware. Don't you have a sigh of relief? Whew, it was only adware. It's just someone trying to redirect them, make some money. Wasn't a big deal. But that adware program got in how? Unpatched software, social engineering. The two things that the government intruder, the foreign adversary, the advanced intellectual adversary would do to break into your company. When I see adware, I see a huge risk. I don't just see adware. I want to know, how did the adware get in? That's so important. So if you start using the red pill of this talk, data-driven defense, and you care about root causes as much as you do about what they did when they were in, you will see adware just as risky as the most malicious program you could ever find in your company. Because the effort to get in took the same, and if it was only adware, you have a problem. And that problem could allow a bigger problem in. Also, poor accountability. And a lot of people, some teams are like, Roger, I liked everything you said till you got to this part. And it was the idea that when vendors or employees say that I want to buy this thing and I'm putting my personal reputation on it, that you hold them accountable. They want to buy this cool device that everybody uses that costs $100,000. They want to switch antivirus from here to here, whatever it's going to be. When a person makes that pitch, they got to bring you the data, they got to make their case, and then you tell them, I'm going to hold you or the vendor, whoever, depending on who's pushing the solution, that it does what it says it does. If you tell me that you can detect ADP or you can detect every virus and you don't need to have a signature, I'm going to hold you accountable, the vendor, for saying it does what it is supposed to do. I think some survey from RSA, the RSA conference, says something like 80 or 90% of all security solutions end up on the shelf, undeployed. And I know I go to like a lot of companies and we'll deploy a solution. Like I was at one of the largest companies in the world putting in honeypots, you know, so fake computer systems designed to do stuff. I was like, well, who's going to keep this updated? Who's going to watch the event logging reports, blah, blah, blah. They said, oh, we don't have anybody full time. Like, what? You just hired me to be in here for a cost of $50,000 for a couple of weeks to put this in here. You're not going to monitor it? They're like, we'll check in on it periodically. Which I know what that means. It means that honeypot is never going to be checked after I walk, maybe 1 or 2 days. Because then you get busy, other things break, get other priorities, resulting in money down the drain. Lack of communication, again, that's probably the hugest one I see, is that a lot of times in a company, I'll find the person, like I'll find this guy or girl, and they really understand what's broken. They're like, you know what, it's social engineering. It's unpatched, whatever this program is, whatever, and they really get it. And we talk over this and they get it, but that person does not communicate effectively well enough, or maybe they tell the coworkers, like they sit in the room and they're like, hey, you know, we know this is the problem. It's unpatched software and social engineering or whatever it happens to be, and they kind of complain about it, but they don't make it turn into a communications device that gets communicated up the chain of command. And that sitting there bitching in a room is not going to get you anything until it gets to somebody high level that has control of the purse strings or the resources. So you need to collect metrics, data-driven metrics, of the problems, and then communicate that up the chain. Best thing you can do, I used to make, I was like 3 charts. I used to do all my PowerPoints with 3, like here's the problem, you know, here's the damage from the problem, and here's the solution. I used to make 3 slides and I would hand it to my manager, and my manager could go, because remember, of course, senior management doesn't like a lot of slides. They like pictures, less words, 3 slides works well. So because of all this built-in inefficiencies, IT defenders often fail to identify in a clear and timely way all the threat scenarios they face. That's absolutely true. They don't focus on the initial compromises, the root causes, Like when I go to people, I go, what's the number one way you're broken? Let me ask you that again today in your head. What's the number one way your company is exploited the most? Is it unpatched software? And if it's unpatched software, what unpatched software? Almost everybody that thinks it's unpatched software, they go, I think it's Windows. Take a look. It usually isn't Windows related. Windows, attackers stopped messing with Windows when Windows Update started patching most things most of the time. It's usually third-party browser applications. And if you know it, do other people on your team know it? And do you understand the different risks? Because, of course, just asking metrics, just going how many, okay, Roger, I had 10,000 people compromised from unpatched software and I had 1,000 broken in by social engineering. Well, a lot of times that social engineering is what will lead to your biggest damage awards. It isn't purely just a metrics game. But anytime you have something broken in, you need to find out what happened. What damage did it result in? And let me start to accumulate that. Because without that, I can't get risk relevance at all. So understand the comparative relative risk of the different threats. Broadly communicate those threats to all stakeholders. Efficiently coordinate agreed upon responses to risk. So at Microsoft, when we found that we had Conficker and we were trying to fix it, one of the things we didn't do super well at first is like, oh, Conficker, if it comes in email, this is how Outlook stops it. If it comes in Internet Explorer, this is how the Internet Explorer stops it. If it comes through the file share, this is how you should stop it. But we really didn't tell all the teams. We didn't bring them together to go, hey, this is the problem. Here's the five modalities. And we sometimes found out that people went, oh, you know what? If it's coming through Outlook, here's another way to get to that same problem. We covered this hole, but we didn't think about that hole. And so sometimes what would happen is we put a patch out, and then we'd have to, the next month, put out another patch that kind of closed another attack vector to the same program. So we got better about bringing all the teams together. Senior management now meets and goes, here's these big threats. Here's the way they're breaking in. And we share all the information across multiple Microsoft teams. So we try to do it as best we can. And then again, very importantly, measure the success of deployed defensive resources against the threats they are designed to mitigate. Hold those things accountable. Because people don't do these things, it leads to weaknesses and misalignment of computer security defenses against the greatest threats. So here's how most IT defenders see the threats. There's about, overall, there's about 5,000 to 7,000 different vulnerabilities announced in a given year. That's like 15 a day. They're coming and coming and coming and coming and coming. And this is why, because you get so many, even while you're sitting here in this talk, there's been two new publicly announced vulnerabilities, I'm sure. But they see them as what I say, bubbles in a glass of champagne. I've got this problem and that problem and this problem and that problem. And what gets fixed? When they're coming in at 15 a day, what do you fix? Well, what management tells you, what management was reading in Time Magazine, heard on the radio coming in sometimes. Right? Sometimes you hear on the radio what your company's doing today to fix something. But everybody sees all these problems, and so they kind of apply these defenses. Like, I go to companies all the time, IT for IT divisions, that will have 30 to 100 active projects. And there's nobody on any of those project teams that tells me they think they're going to finish them on time and that they're going to do everything that they think they're going to do. And a lot of times people don't agree with the project, or by the time they get through the project, the problem they're trying to solve was done. I would say in most organizations, you're lucky if you can really deploy 3, 4, 5, let's say a handful of IT projects well, efficiently, as designed. If you have 40 projects that you're trying to push out, I assure you, you're not going to finish all 40. Or I wrote a column and said, you know what, instead of trying to do 40, you want to impress me, fix one thing this year. And I don't mean that lightly. What I mean is, suppose that unpatched software is your biggest problem. Well, first of all, you got to identify, it's never, you know, you got 5,000, 7,000 different software programs in your environment, whatever the number is. It's never all those things is your problem. It's a couple of software programs that's your problem. Well, focus. Like if unpatched Java is a problem, or it's unpatched Flash or Acrobat, or if it's unpatched Windows, if that truly is how people are breaking in, you want to impress me? Fix that one thing. Let me come back in a year and find one thing fixed, because I've never seen it. When I go to a place and go, hey, your number one problem is unpatched software. This is what you need to fix. And I go back a year later, they have not fixed the problem. It's amazing to me. And it's not because people want to be bad. You just got a lot of things coming at you. okay, Roger, you're in charge of patch manager. I want you to patch Java. You put a project team, and I'm going strong for a couple weeks. Oh, Roger, you know, we need you to be on this virtual smart card project or whatever. It's really easy for the next emergency, next bubble in a glass of champagne to be distracting to everybody involved. How do you stop the distraction? So you got all these bubbles in a glass. How do you stop it? What? Prioritization through risk relevance. This is what you should do. If you collect the right data and go, hey, we don't want to focus on just the configure worm. We found out that unpatched software and these five programs are mostly responsible for almost all the risk. If I look at most companies, probably almost all the risk is from 3 to 5 things. And every other thing that you could possibly do, PKI, SHA-2 migrations, intrusion detection, hardening stuff, preventing pass the hash, blah, 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 blah. In most cases, all of that stuff is just the little bubbles. And like the companies know it. They're like, yeah, unpatched Java's a problem, but we just can't fix it because it breaks. How many times have you had to say that or heard that? We can't patch because it breaks too much. Well, attackers know then that's why they like unpatched Java. If you fix the unpatched Java, and there are ways to fix it, and if you don't know how, if you can't patch Java, you email me, rogrim@microsoft.com, and I'll send you a list of 10 things you can do if you can't patch Java. But I can tell you what the answer isn't, is that I ignored the biggest bubble. But that's what many, many IT companies do. But you're not going to get focused on the right problems unless you collect data, data-driven defense, to tell them, here's our biggest problems. And so when I go, hey, Roger, I need you to get on that new project. I go, hey, I just want you to be aware the project I'm working on is like 50% of total risk in this environment. And the project you're getting ready to get me on has not even caused a single exploit yet. Unlikely to cause a single exploit. I'd be glad to drop this project for that project. Just wanted you to be aware of the risk, the relative risk, the prioritization. And let them make the decision. So data-driven defense says that we're going to collect better localized threat intelligence. We're going to rank risk appropriately based upon that new intelligence. Create an effective communications plan so we can communicate what those risks are. Define and collect metrics. And let me say, that's easily the hardest part. Like everyone's like, Roger, it sounds like a great idea, but how do I collect these metrics that you think were going to be so successful in my life? It depends upon the company. So I will easily say that you cannot detect everything, and you cannot collect every metric that you need. But I'm going to show you some ways you can collect some interesting metrics. And I'll go further that what I'm challenging you all today is to look at a data-driven defense in a new way and ask yourself, here's my number one problem. What type of detection and metrics do I need to solve that problem? I can't tell you. I can give you some ideas of what other people have done, what I've done. But in your company, your detection metrics is you've got to figure it out. You need to go to your people and go, hey, we have this problem. How do we detect it? And we've certainly done that at Microsoft. Then you select and deploy your root cause defenses, review and approve the plan as needed, and got a typo there. So that you have a data-driven analysis with more threat intelligence, localized, and localized means it's coming from your company's own current and future and past experience. So by the way, your past experience is very, very relevant because every company I go to, if they're being attacked through, let's say, social engineering successfully the most, when I come back in a year, that's usually still the same problem. Because usually how you're being attacked the most means you've got a gap in your defenses. And until you address the root cause of that gap, it's going to stay your number one problem. So your past experience is very relevant, far more relevant than some people go, well, how's Microsoft attacked the most? You know? Well, I could tell you. I don't think they want me to tell you. But if I told you, it really wouldn't mean that much because we have different sets of problems and defenses and gaps. So you need to do your own threat intelligence, your own detection, your own root cause analysis, and then let that drive your defense. And then it all goes to one goal, streamlining mitigations against the root causes of successful exploitation. And by the way, that's an important word, successful exploitation. Firewalls get beat on a lot, right? Have you ever turned the firewall on your computer at home by your cable modem? you end up with like 60,000 probes, right, in the first day, and you quickly decide you're not going to follow each one of those probes down to its source to find out who's attacking you. If the firewall's blocking it, I don't care so much as the successful exploits. So what matters mostly to you should be the successful exploits in your company. So first start by trying to collect better and localized threat intelligence, focusing on historic and current attacks. And I'd say then look at your new, most likely to happen in the wild exploits and industry targeting, and then everything else. Well, I go to companies where their newsletter talking about threats, they'll go, oh, here's these big threats. This guy broke into a safe in Albuquerque, New Mexico using a USB key. You know, they have these all these great threats and things you need to be worried about. Oh, my God. There's all these really wild things breaking in. How is your company being successfully broken into the most is really the only metric that matters, not these things you read in the media. So we have that chart that says as we go out further away from the company, the information becomes less valid, relevant, and valued to the company. Unless you know, like, Heartbleed attack happens, you know you got 15,000 Heartbleed ports open to the internet. That might be something to act on. Data is king. If you can't measure it, you can't manage it. You cannot go, well, I take this back. You can go to your CIO and go, hey, I think that unpatched Java is our biggest problem. Saw Roger talk. He told me unpatched Java is my biggest problem. I think that's our biggest problem. It's not going to work. You need data. And it's funny. I was talking to a CISO of one of the largest companies in the world, and I helped them collect better metrics so they now knew how they were being successfully attacked the most. And I was telling him, I was like, oh, we got some gaps. We got to find out what we're missing and build this. And he literally said to me, he goes, Roger, if you tell me how we're successfully attacked the most, how is that going to change anything I do? I'm already trying to do everything. He goes, listen, I have a list of 30 things here. Look at this. Our red team did a penetration test, and here's the 30 things they found that we need to do. Which one am I supposed to do first? And I was like, well, look at the data. So part of what I say where data's king is, don't bring me unranked list anymore. If you bring me an unranked list, like as a matter of fact, I got one just recently. Roger, you know, you like to do education, right? I said, yeah, we'd like you to help with these five videos and end user education. And here's the five topics. And I got to tell you, when they showed me that I volunteered, then I saw the five topics, they are nothing related to what I would have ever thought would make us more secure. They're the most obscure. I was like, where did they get this list? Like it had to be people's pet projects, right? And sometimes when it's a pet project, the CISO or CIO, you're doing it no matter what. But if I can get data to fight back and go, hey, here's these five things that I do that I'm trying to fit in. I've got some data collected, and here's the one that seems like it had the most bang for the buck. At least you can get working towards some of them. So gut feeling should be backed by data. Think about this. Up until this point, almost our entire lives, our entire careers have been gut feeling. Hey, I'm seeing a lot of people that are, you know, infected by this particular malware. This is how I think it's happening. It shouldn't be thinking, it should be let's collect the metrics. Let's create metrics and detection methods and use data. Data's king. Data's used to drive event alerting. You need to have metrics for comparisons and reporting. A perfect data event to create a security alert should contain one of the following attributes. High likelihood that occurrence indicates unauthorized activity. Preferably one. Like I detect PW dump on a domain controller. One event should say that there's something really bad that's never a natural occurrence. So either a single occurrence or an unexpectedly large number or even small number in a given time period indicates a high chance of maliciousness. Low number of false positives, an occurrence should always result in investigative forensics. For security alerting, you may collect things like bad logons just to have in the background. But even let's say like bad logins, every company I go to has a certain amount of bad logons in the environment, you know, 3,000 a day, 30,000 a day. But all of a sudden, maybe when that triples or quadruples, when people ask me, what's my alert threshold? It's usually something like 6 above. I want to know when a password guessing worm's gone off or when a script had a password changed and it wasn't changed right. Usually when you have your malicious occurrence, it isn't small. It's a very huge jump. It doesn't go from 3,000 a day to 4,000. It's like 3,000 to 12,000. And all you had to do was be looking for it to measure. When I say that you need to create metrics, a lot of times the metrics are there. I think Verizon data breach report, what does it say, 80% of all successful intrusions are actually in the event logs if people had looked. 80%, and that statistic has been true for a decade now. Go read your latest Verizon data breach report. The data is there. And you can use that data to push everything else. But let me give you some examples of a data-driven defense again. First of all, if you don't have this already, start thinking about the term IT security data analytics. At Microsoft, we hired, I think, a total of 25 people to do IT security data analytics on different teams. So their function is to collect all these systems. When we started, we created a huge system, huge database system, to collect as many events as we could from all over the company. We weren't even generating events in some cases, but now we are collecting them to this massive database, and we're starting to correlate things in the database, and we have to have people, that's all they do for a living, is do data analytics for IT security. And when we come to them and say, hey, we're trying to detect ATP, that, like when we decided to make the advanced threat analytics, has anyone seen that product? It is kick butt. And our ATP, which is like built into Windows Defender now, I got to tell you, I've been with Microsoft again for 10 years, been following Microsoft for 30 years. I've never been so proud of Microsoft and its defensive capability as I am in these last two bullet points. Those two products plus the Azure Security Center are built by people like me. They came to me, like the Azure SQL people, said, Roger, can you tell us, what do you think would indicate maliciousness in SQL, in Azure SQL? And I had given a talk just like this, and I got with the team, they were working out of Israel, and I came up with like five things. And then like 3 days later, like, yep, we caught some badness in our environment. I was like, what? They said, yep, we're fast and furious now. It doesn't take 18 months to implement something. But they implemented some rules, and they said, not only do we detect badness, and we're able to eradicate it and also alert some customers, but we're building it into every product that we have. So sometimes you just got to get together with the people that have the capabilities and start thinking, what would it take to detect it? So like for a while, it took us a year to figure out how can we detect APT doing password dumping and then doing pass the hash or golden ticket attacks or something like that. Every time we kept getting these new scenarios, how can we detect it? How can we detect it? So we meet with our security SMEs, then we get with the people that can implement it in the system, and then we have to test it and look for false positives, because again, if there's a whole lot of false positives, it's worthless. And if you haven't seen these last two or three products right there, they're just absolutely phenomenal. But so you have to use data analytics and your data. If you're a database person, you're king in my book. If you know how to manipulate data and link databases and give me reports, I'm in heaven with you. And everybody in your environment has to understand the biggest attacks and threats. If they don't, how can you be efficient? Specific patch teams. If you find out that a couple of unpatched programs are your biggest problems, you should incentivize people to fix those programs. You know what I hate about the patch teams? Patch teams are told to patch everything, but then they have no authority to patch everything. They're like, you can't patch that. That breaks it. So you give them all the responsibility and none of the authority. And then any team goes, it broke our thing. So instead of telling that team, you need to fix that software. You need to go to the vendor and get them to fix that software. You need to do one of these offsetting mitigations. So it should be that the patching team, when you learn that unpatched Java or whatever it is, unpatched whatever, is responsible for 50% of the attacks in your company, you should create a project team that's given the authority, and their authority is from the CIO or above, to go fix that problem. And when someone says, nope, you can't do that, you can't patch our machines, go talk to the CIO, go talk to the CEO, go talk to the board of directors. No unranked security list anymore. When someone hands you for the rest of your life, this is the red pill talking to you. When someone hands you an unranked list of IT things that you need to go do, start asking which of these is most risk relevant. Push back. And that's what we've done at our teams in Microsoft. Don't just bring us a list of 30 things. If someone brings you a list of 30 things, how many are you completing? None? Maybe one, two, three? How do you figure out what's going to be fixed? If you get a list of 30 things, how do you decide what's going to be fixed? Well, pet projects with the CIO outside. It's also, which ones can I do? Wow, that's a hard list. Which one's going to do? Well, I think I can do this one. That's not how it should be picked. It should be picked by which one has the most risk that we're going to tackle. Collect the right data at the right place. If you tell me how many viruses you detected, that's not nearly as important as how long that virus is on your system before it got removed. So what we did at Microsoft in an experiment was we looked at our AppLocker data. A lot of people, I know there's a lot of people in here from Microsoft. Unbeknownst to some of them, we turn on AppLocker in audit-only mode on every machine in Microsoft. So we do a snapshot of any machine, the corporate laptop, and then anything that our machine or server, anything you add to it after that ends up in the event log under an AppLocker event. Any brand new process, software, whatever, ends up in the log. So then when we detect a virus using our antivirus software, we actually pull the event from AppLocker and go, oh, here's this process created by this virus. How long was this how long did AppLocker detect this process? How long ago before this antivirus detected it? So we now have an aggregate figure that's called mean time to detect. How long? We have it for every machine, every malware program. We have it throughout the divisions, throughout the company. But how long did it take to detect it and remove it? It depends. So what the question is, what do you use for log aggregation? It's different in every company. It's different within Microsoft, and we had to update our tools. We even only collected data on servers at first and not workstations and then highly critical servers. So it's changed and evolved, and it's everything. It's everything in Microsoft. But so good question, and every company I go to, it's different. And we tried lots of things, and I could say at Microsoft, I forget what they said, but was it like 600 billion events a day or something we're collecting now? It's crazy. Yeah. Yeah, I've seen people roll in minutes, you know? Like, we're literally. So what you want to do, though, is make sure that what gets passed up is the events that need to be passed up. Like, most of what's in your Windows event logs or security event logs is useless information. But I do want to collect the stuff like the bad login or something like that, or some type of pass the hash notice or account lockout or something. So we don't need to collect everything. Matter of fact, that's a big problem. Most companies I go to, they collect everything. You don't want to collect everything. You want to collect just what you have to. But that's a sore spot, and there's no easy answer to some of it. Yeah, certainly it's a problem. But let me say, data, sometimes collecting data is a huge problem. It's different every company. There's different products. But again, sometimes we had the AppLocker data being collected already, and we had the antivirus data being collected, but we never thought about, hey, let's match the two and see what the timestamp difference is. That gave us an incredibly useful figure that we can say, hey, Roger, on your machine, there was a virus on your machine for 2 days that could have been doing anything to your system before we removed it. So what sites have you been to? What did you do? That sort of thing. Or even more so, we do it across the company. Suppose our mean time to detect starts getting longer and longer and longer, we can go to our malware detection teams and go, hey, what's going on with the product that you're now not detecting things as fast? Or even think about, you're trying to think about a new antivirus vendor. That's a great way to measure the success rates of two different vendors. It isn't purely how many viruses you detected, because everybody's missing stuff. It's how long it went undetected before the person became 100%. Social engineering training again. That was highly effective. At most companies, you got to collect your data, but I think there's a lot of social engineering going on. And certainly, if you look at the most damaging attacks, the ones that end up in the news, it's a large percentage of social engineering cases that they socially engineered somebody in a project or the CIO or the CEO or something like that. And if that's the case in your company, you've seen that type of damage in your company, when they offer either no social engineering training or 30 minutes a year, come back with the data and go, hey, this seems to be, I can make a case that we should make people go to a half-day training. Because we did it at Microsoft, and it was hugely successful on the groups that we did it with. And now we can argue that data point, that when we sent them to a half-day of training, it resulted in this much less phishing, successful phishing. We even had training where we had people that would call up and try to talk receptionist and people out of passwords, try to get people to reset passwords and things like that. And we did a thing where we said, okay, you need to reset your password? Well, tell us, use your smart card, and you can automatically reset your password with your smart card. Oh, you don't happen to have your smart card? Well, give me your employee ID. And if they didn't have one of those three pieces of information, okay, now it's going to a very high-risk situation. And so we're able to change a process that significantly reduced to zero the number of passwords that were reset by malicious hackers externally. And it was a problem for a while at Microsoft that we were involved in. So by itself, a data-driven defense isn't going to win. But I do want you to start working on reducing initial exploits by looking at the root causes. You also have your assumed breach defenses that you have to work with. You have your defense in depth stuff. You need to be making your authentications more reliable. You need to be making your configurations more hardened and blah, blah, blah. And then you always have the unknown and assume risk, right? The stuff you just don't know that's going to hit you. Even if you follow everything I say, there's nothing to say that the person won't put some zero day on you that's going to take over your company and embarrass you. But the problem is what we're doing right now, most companies are doing the bottom three fairly well and the top one really badly. They think they're doing the top one really well, but they're not. And if I ask, let me ask you again, does your company, can they tell you what is the number one cause of the most successful exploitations in your company? And if you don't know the answer, you can start to work on it with a data-driven defense. And the big, this is a huge thing. I'm dedicating the next 17 years of my life. And it's pretty simple, right? It's like, I feel like I just went through an hour of telling you, hey, you should defend against the stuff that's attacking you. But you'd be amazed of how many companies get so lost in the weeds of everything that they are not putting out the right defenses. And they don't have the right, they're not collecting any metrics that are useful. So with that, I think we have 15 minutes left or 13 minutes left. Any questions? Like, Roger, how did you get this job? Resume spoof. So what I do, I don't see any questions here, but I do go to companies now and I help them figure out a gap. I say, okay, let's get more intelligent threat intelligence and let's find out what your risk and threats are. Let's make up another matrix that shows us here's all the ways that you can detect those things and what are the gaps. So that's a big thing that I do, gap analysis. So here's all the threats and risk and we're going to do a better job of detecting and putting metrics around that. Here's all the way we're detecting those things. Here are the gaps. And then I throw in a mitigation based upon risk relevance. That's what I do. I go to no company's the same. Every company has positives and negatives and advantages and disadvantages. But I tell you what, when I come into the company, and I usually start it out by giving this talk when they hire us to come in there, there's always people going, yeah, and it turns them on to something. And they think about something else that they hadn't thought about before, and they're able to push it a little bit further. And it ends up reducing risk within their environment faster than it had before. So no other questions? So if you come to Key Largo, don't worry about the sharks, unless you're holding a bloody fish. Thank you so much for your time, and y'all have a good day.